Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
11.
Now, Midway.
The Midday Midway.
1, 2.
Midway, the most important of the year.
3, 4.
The most exciting thing on the Midway.
5, 6, 7, 8.
Our objective is Midway.
9, 10.
It's not 10. You see, you're on 10 here. Where can you go from there? Where? To 11. 11, exactly.
11.
Midway. So real, you can almost feel it.
The Midday Midway with Bernstein and McKnight on the Score.
Previewing a big football game in this town Sunday night, the Bears and the Rams. We talked about it at length. We discussed, at least the use of Allen Robinson. We talked about the run game. You brought up a really interesting quote from Mike Furry about how the complementary football, how these routes work together, properly run routes to scheme guys open.
Attention to detail and wide receivers making sure that they're giving the quarterback the proper targets at depth to throw to.
Mike Florio had all the latest on the various goings-on in the always exciting NFL, and we discussed Jim Boylan's first game and what went on with some drama on the coaching staff and what may be significant regarding who's here, who's promoted, who's demoted, and who's not here.
Saw this story kind of clicking around a little bit, and I'll read a little bit of an excerpt from the Deadspin article about it. Bama offensive coordinator Mike Locksley was the head coach at New Mexico in 2009. Locksley was, in 2009, hit with an age and sex discrimination complaint by administrative assistant Sylvia Lopez. She claimed that Locksley told her he wanted younger women in the role to help with recruiting. That claim was later withdrawn. Several months later, in September of that same year, 2009, Locksley was accused of punching his assistant, J.B. Gerald, in the face. Here's a quote from the article at the time. Locksley became upset about Gerald's response to questions concerning a play in a loss against Air Force and began shouting about Adam and other coaches. According to a lawsuit later filed by Gerald, which also included allegations of a hostile work environment, Locksley then attacked Gerald, pinned him to his chair, and choked him, the lawsuit said. Other coaches in the room pulled Locksley and Gerald apart, but while Gerald was restrained, Locksley broke free and struck him in the face several times.
Perfect for Maryland.
Locksley was just hired as the head coach at Maryland.
Perfect.
Yesterday.
He can do that to players then. And if he accidentally kills a player, it won't be a big deal.
They just got rid of DJ Durkin in a harrowing back and forth where it didn't seem like anybody was actually making decisions they were allowed to make. The board of governors chose to be like emperors and make hires and fires and statements and all kinds of missteps. And now they've hired this guy because he was the Bama offensive coordinator for one of the best teams in college football, probably college football's history, with Tua Tagovailoa at quarterback, and Mike Locksley gets to now helm the Maryland Terrapins.
Couldn't you find a guy that maybe didn't have something like this?
Is it impossible to find someone without anything on their record like this?
That's great. I did not know there was something called the Bible Archaeology Search and Exploration Institute, or BASE.
Oh, yeah, I subscribe to the newsletter.
Well, they've got a website, and in a blog post, BASE has said, as unusual as this may sound, the BASE team has uncovered compelling evidence that the Ark of the Covenant may well have been spirited up the Nile River to an eventual resting place in the remote highlands of ancient Kush, or modern-day Ethiopia. These scholars believe that the Ark may have landed in Africa after it was taken out of Israel. It's, of course, said to be a gold-covered wooden chest containing two stone tablets on which the Ten Commandments, which Moses brought down from Mount Sinai, are written. It is also said to contain other biblical items, such as Aaron's rod, which is thought to have magical powers. Since it vanished, there have been several theories as to where the Ark is now, including Mount Nebo in Israel, southern Africa, Ethiopia, Egypt, and even several locations in Europe. So here's what they said. According to their research by the group BASE, the Ark was taken out of the Temple Mount in Jerusalem during the reign of Manasseh, where it was first taken to a Jewish colony on Elephantine Island in Egypt. You following?
Yeah.
After that, it is thought it was taken down the Nile to Lake Tana in Ethiopia, and in particular Tana Kirkos Island, considered to be a holy island, only populated by Christian monks. From there, the Ark was moved to Aksum, a city in the north of the country. The BASE Institute claims to have spoken to a man at the church who was the guardian of the Ark of the Covenant, and who spent his life inside a fenced-off area surrounding the church and claimed he would not leave the compound until he died and a new guardian took over the role.
What?
The man claimed he was the only person who could look on the Ark because it was a holy object. He and the villagers would protect it with their lives if necessary. The same guardian had been approached by the Smithsonian in 2007, and he was told, "I have no other name. I'm the guardian of the Ark." While the Base Institute did not claim the Ark had been found, it did say at this juncture, we cannot say with certainty that it is, but neither can we say for certain that it isn't. What we have concluded is that St. Mary's of Zion Church in Aksum, Ethiopia, is the resting place of either an incredible replica of the biblical Ark of the Covenant or the actual Ark of the Covenant itself.
So who gets to be his successor, this guardian? Does the guardian pick his successor?
I don't know.
Is he taking applications?
Why, do you want it?
I don't know. Can we go make trips down there? It seems to be a pretty decent job. If I remember watching Temple of, or rather Last Crusade, it seems like a pretty decent job.
That's the Holy Grail.
Yeah,
that's
but I mean, not that the sounds arc. Like the same job description.
Randy Brown needs work.
You think that's something he wants to apply for?
I don't know.
He can guard the Ark.
Yes. Here it is. We need you to get in a low defensive stance and guard the Ark. But you know what we need now, don't you? Top men.
That's absolutely what we've got to have. We've got to make sure we're digging in the right place. We have to take back one cubit for
Kedem.
The Ark.
Kedem.
Oh, that's right. That's right. It's Kedem for the take God whose Ark this is.
One Kedem. Yes. And we need top men.
I don't know how familiar you are, probably not so much, with the gathering of drunks that is T-Box, the bar crawl that began in 1996 and descends on Wrigleyville for a solid 48 hours each and every winter. T-Box is, I guess, coming up on September 8th. I myself did a few years at T-Box, probably a good 4 or 5 year run.
I was just about to say, if you've ever attended T-Box, I hate you. So.
Yeah, no, I did 4 or 5 years. I remember thinking each year I was there, I kind of hate myself. So, you know, if you go, you kind of understand. What T-Box is a giant 30 to 40,000 person bar crawl just up and down Clark Street with PJs and boxes of cereal. It's Christmas themed, but also vaguely themed with disappointment and drunkenness. It's apparently there has been an oral history written on T-Box in the Red Eye, and I'm clicking through it. And if you've ever gone, it's worth reading because okay. It's just nonsense. It's a show, is what it is. But T-Box might not have happened if not for the 2003 Chicago Cubs, because apparently, the guy who has now, or the group rather, that took over running T-Box and is now operating this whole thing, is the dude who came up with the Industry We Trusty T-shirt. That was his, he like left business for a little while, whatever he was. Right, I know. But so he starts like selling T-shirts, comes up with this thing, and then as that takes off, had they gone to the World Series, he says in his profile on the Red Eye, he was going to be at a MasterCard commercial. The Cubs were going to buy a bunch of these T-shirts to carry around in Wrigley Field. And the Steve Bartman game changed his life. So that is how we got T-Box, this jet-infused.
Wow.
I mean, it is just... It's,
what makes it so different? Are you drinking more? Drinking
yeah,
more frequently?
Yeah, it's a day long. It starts at like 7 a.m. and people march up and down in onesies with Tigger costumes and all this kind of... It is an absolute nightmare. It really is.
Raise your hand if you own a can opener.
I do.
Everyone, Ray?
Don't you have
to? You own a can opener? Well, here's the thing. According to Food and Wine, millennials don't like can openers. And what's happening is no one's buying canned tuna anymore.
I didn't realize you could like or not like a can opener. You just kind of have to use one.
According to Food and Wine, it says, if you can answer the question, where do you keep your can opener? Nice going, Pops. Clearly, you're not hip to the millennial trend of not even bothering to own one. And that's what Starkist is saying is has to do with the downturn in canned tuna sales. In the Wall Street Journal, Starkist's VP of Marketing and Innovation specifically cited young people's supposed distaste for the device as one of the many reasons the tuna market is struggling. He said a lot of millennials don't own can openers. See, growing up, we had an electric can opener.
Well, you just put the thing, like it's got the magnet, it attaches, and you just
lift
the lid
out. You close it.
Relatable Bernstein, I'm telling you, these electric can openers.
And it just, I just thought that was a can. And then I realized you don't need that.
No.
And it's just very easy to turn the little roller thingy and open a can.
So are you using the can opener the right way?
What do you mean?
You know how everybody puts it down so that it's parallel with the can, and then you screw it around, and you've got that little hinge left?
Yeah.
Roll it over.
What do you mean?
Turn it over so that it's parallel with the top
of the can. Oh, I've seen that, yeah.
And then you crank the thing, and the can opener is built to lift the lid. I just found this out the other day, and now I kind of want to buy cans just so that I can do that.
He hates these cans. According to the research firm Mintel, only 32% of adult consumers under the age of 35 recently bought canned seafood, compared to 45% of shoppers 55 and older. Major downward trend for canned tuna, which has seen its sales wane by 42% over the last three decades after a peak in the late 1980s. Hmm. The sale of fresh and frozen fish has grown over that time. But it's only one of the problems with canned tuna because it conjures up negative associations, mercury poisoning, harm to dolphins, even if those things aren't issues anymore.
It smells like a butt.
It does smell.
The fishy smell and the cat food-like appearance is mentioned as well. So I'm still a fan, and I actually prefer tuna to albacore. I actually want my tuna to taste like tuna. I love a good tuna casserole. I like a tuna melt.
Just buy the packs. They've got little tinfoil packs now. You just rip the top off. You don't need the can opener.
Or
you can still buy your damn tuna.
You go to the salad bar at Mariano's, and you get a big spoon, and their tuna is perfectly representative tuna. You know who else has good tuna? Subway.
It does. The tuna, I will allow you to, you can eat the tuna from Subway.
It's good.
It's good stuff.
It is
really
good.
It really is. Mixing it was always super weird, though. Because you put the gloves on. I worked at Subway. It was my first job in high school.
Well, I hope you were breaking in to do this just to entertain yourself.
No, I worked at Subway for a little while, and it was you put the mayo and everything. It was just cold and gross and squishy and nasty and weird, and you threw the container in there, and you were just glad you were done with it for the day. Speaking of, well, eating animals, I guess. Have you seen at 3:23 yesterday afternoon, PETA, the People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, launched this campaign? Words matter, they say, and as our understanding of social justice evolves, our language evolves along with it. Here's how to remove, Dan, speciesism from your daily conversations. For instance, instead of kill two birds with one stone, it's feed two birds with one scone.
Oh.
Instead of be the guinea pig, it's be the test tube. Instead of beat a dead horse, it's feed a fed horse.
What about wake a sleeping horse?
Nothing for that yet. Instead of bring home
get
the
out
bacon,
it, PETA.
It's bring home the bagels. Instead of take the bull by the horns, it's take the flower by the thorns.
Yeah, these will take off.
These are going nowhere, and speciesism isn't a thing.
Right.
It's not a thing.
I think you buried the lead.
It's
on
not
this.
A thing. Stop this. That's not a thing.
American Airlines says security video footage proves a woman in a wheelchair was not left alone overnight at Chicago O'Hare. Did you see this story?
No,
it was everywhere.
I haven't.
This is from WGN. That initially, the story involved a woman named Olympia Warsaw, 67. She's described as having Parkinson's disease, diabetes, and difficulty communicating, flying from Chicago to Detroit on Friday, November 30th, after attending her ex-husband's funeral. When her flight was canceled, family members said she sat alone in her wheelchair and was unattended for 5 hours until a relative came to pick her up. They said her cell phone had run out of battery, and that they had been let. So the person who had been assigned to her, his shift was over, so he just went home and didn't assign her to anybody else. But it turns out that's not really true. And immediately, to their credit, American Airlines said, oh my God, we can't believe this happened. It'll never happen again. We're going to comp her for everything. They were going to send her to a hotel, and she didn't want to go to the hotel because you'd never medications.
Yeah.
And the whole thing, there was this whole story, and they bent over backwards to try to apologize, and we're going to talk to our subcontractor, the people who handle these things for us, who handle the attendants, and we're going to review our processes. And they sent out spokespeople to say all the right things. But now, wait a second. Now they've got video, and now they're providing the video timeline. The woman's son told the Chicago Sun-Times his mother was found in a dark hallway near a restroom where another passenger had taken her upon request. An American Airlines spokesman previously said the airline met with the family, refunded her ticket, was taking steps to ensure it doesn't happen. But after launching an investigation, the airline is proving the family's story does not add up. American Airlines released a timeline of the incident to WGN News after reviewing camera footage, call records from the wheelchair attendant's phone, and reservations call records. The timeline shows 45 minutes elapsed between the time the wheelchair attendant left her and the relative came to pick her up. 45 minutes. The timeline also shows that Warsaw used a walker to go outside and smoke on two different occasions. So they've got videotape of her like, screw it, I'm gonna go outside and have a butt.
No free plane ticket.
No free ticket. But she needed, you know, she's sitting there for a couple minutes, needed a dart, wanted to go outside.
So we had a family looking for a freebie here.
Grabbed a heater and came back and really wasn't left alone, and it wasn't
really was a nice 45 minutes.
What the hell is Shane doing?
What do you mean? Where?
Shane just walked by.
Find my Shane tracker didn't go
off. Holding his phone up, pushing the coat rack around.
That's because Shane's an idiot and he's trying to make this coat hanger Twitter account a thing.
He's trying to make.
He's also mad at me because I didn't put my coat on the coat hanger.
Seriously, this guy finally gets a job, a full-time job in management, and he's walking around videotaping himself with an anthropomorphic coat rack.
Part of the pitch with Mitch was a lifelike coat rack, the Twitter profile and everything. Social media, this is going to be big. Right. It's going to catch on. It's going to happen.
Dan, I am so pissed that you thought that was me behind that account yesterday.
It's only because you were the first follower.
I have been in, I've been here, this is my 19th year at the score. That is the most insulted I've ever been here. And I worked for Murph.
Yeah, don't you
actually tried.
I think you don't you get the equivalent of like a VA loan for that? Don't you get all sorts of special discounts now that
your hazard pay?
Yeah, anybody that has worked for Murph gets all kinds of things like, you know, debt forgiveness and life insurance for life and all that.
Deserves it.
I think so. That is the Midday Midway. This segment is brought to you by Timeshare Exit Team. Another year stuck paying your timeshare's annual maintenance fees. If your timeshare is no longer working for you and you need out, call Timeshare Exit Team, 844-915-EXIT, 844-915-EXIT, or visit timeshareexitteam.com.
The Bulls thing has been interesting. We'll talk to Mark Schanowski at 1140. The Bears-Rams game has one little thing that's kind of bugged me some about the season in general, and it's going back to the game that I hated watching the most so far this year. I'll tell you what it is and how it's been chewing at me when we come back. It's Bernstein and McKnight, 670 The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
It'll be a good fight. We got a lot, not just defensively, man, but offensively. We got a lot of weapons, and we got some stuff that needs to be figured out on both sides of the ball. But I'll ride with this team any day, man. Any day against any opponent.
It's Bears defensive tackle Akeem Hicks with Molly and Haw. Just, what was that, Tuesday morning? Bears and Rams set to go on Sunday night. This is the Bernstein and McKnight Show here on 670 The Score. And there's one game, Dan, that's stuck in my craw more than any other in this Bears season so far. And it's one that I think put a lot of things on display in terms of X's and O's. It's one that should have been taken care of. It was a letdown game. It was coming off a bye week. It was coming off a game where you had a historic performance from your quarterback and you had a defense that absolutely ate against an you forced the Buccaneers to make a quarterback change, though they were going to do that anyway. But still, you did it.
It's the game I announced officially I was looking past.
That's the one. It is the loss against the Dolphins. And this is the point in the show where Rick does the thing with the hands, the clasped hands above either shoulder. Does this have a name, by the way? Does that,
for that
celebratory
mechanic
have a name?
The self-celebratory mechanic?
It's where, yeah, you've got the – if you're watching on the stream, the Watch 670, the score, you got it. It's the clasped hand, and it goes one over the one shoulder, and then over to the other side, it's got another.
It's different than the literally patting oneself on the back.
It's not the pat on the back. It's like it's like the conquering hero kind of thing, you know, as you re-enter Rome after beating the Gauls. That's how you're celebrating, I think. No, it's the letdown game against the Dolphins. That's the one that really sticks with me. And again, you've got a mini-bye. You go in against the Giants, and sure, you've got a backup quarterback, and he played like a backup quarterback, but you could have won that game and didn't. There are a lot of different reasons as to why. Saquon Barkley is a big thing. Not getting more pressure on Eli Manning, especially late, a thing. An offense that wanted to give the ball away as often as it could in the first two quarters. That's a
and
thing,
And late
too.
By Taylor Gabriel.
And yeah. Oh, boy, I kind of forget about that late fumble by Gabriel because of the comeback that happened afterward, but that is a huge... huge part of why you needed 10 instead of 7 in that ball game. So the question is again to Matt Nagy. I find it interesting that this season, Matt Nagy is going to be offered as many tests as I could have hoped for out of a new head coach.
Okay.
Maybe you didn't want to see all these tests. Maybe you'd rather walk through this thing with an offense that's clicking and with a defense that's
lights
out.
No, give him
out.
The tasks of Hercules.
Forge
the steel.
Fight the lion. I sow the seeds. You've had a lot of different tests of Matt Nagy, and whether it's answering questions about injuries one way or the other, whether it's asking your team for a response to a subpar game that you ended up losing to a last place NFC team that's going to, I think in the end, you got to win out, but going to in the end cost you a first round bye, cost you perhaps even a home playoff game. I mean, that was a costly thing.
And I had also noted that last week was a test of how great an offensive mind are you if you can find a counter for game tape on your backup quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
And there really wasn't much there was the answer.
I think so, although some of the mistakes made by Chase himself, especially on the snap, I mean, losing that kind of timing in your offense, I think set them back a ton. I don't know. I wouldn't offer an incomplete for that grade, you know, for giving the secondary pitch for throwing that changeup after whatever that was, the fastball with Chase Daniel Lyons. It's a little bit of an incomplete, but you're right. It was somewhat of the same deal.
But as much as that's sticking with you, as much as that's bedeviling you, the idea of that loss having this impact, what if I told you, as we're sitting in Bourbon A, and we're talking with Anthony Miller and Eddie Robinson and Eddie Jackson and Alan Robinson.
Yeah.
Don't want to talk to Eddie Robinson.
No, that's not so
no.
much.
That if I told you...
what, and Anthony Miller. Our chat with Anthony Miller still stands out as one of my favorite from that camp.
If I told you the Bears were to be 8-4 after 12 games, and you would have a loss in there that would bother you...
I think
everything has shifted so quickly that sometimes we lose context and sometimes we lose perspective here. I'm all about being greedy, and I know it's a league in the moment.
It is. It
and
has
you strike
to be.
When the iron's hot.
Look at the Packers. You have Aaron Rodgers and an incompetent everything else, and you're not able to get yourself into the playoffs anymore, not the way you used to with Aaron Rodgers and an incompetent everything else. Nothing's guaranteed to you. I think there is a way. There has to be. Otherwise, I'm going to lose my mind. There has to be a way to raise the expectations while keeping the context that a season deserves. And I think that this Rams game kind of offers that. There might be a chance for that Bears team to stay with the Rams. There is a chance for that Bears team to offer up a performance like the Cowboys did against the Saints 2 weeks ago. In order to do that, though, you've got to be a lot better on offense than you have the last 3 weeks. And I understand Chase Daniel has been under center, but there are a lot of other little things there. And we talked about it with Mike Furry offering up the quotes he did about his receivers and the depth and the precision that hadn't been there against the Giants. That is the kind of all-around total football game that you've got to play against the NFC's best.
Yeah, I'm not optimistic about this week because the Rams just look overwhelming. What you're going to have to try to do to stop Todd Gurley the entire game It's not – and making sure that you're putting them in passing situations where you might be able – maybe you tip a ball to somebody or maybe you get home with a pass rush, but you got to earn that by stopping Gurley. And I just think Sean McVay is bright enough to that he's always seems to be a step ahead of his counterpart, even somebody as smart as Matt Nagy.
Seems that way. Although the offensive line, I mean, you saw the Chiefs get to Jared Goff yep. in that Monday nighter.
And their defense sucks.
Yeah, it's not great. It's what did I write this? Are they 18th? In the league in yards per game given up on defense?
I'm saying the Chiefs defense is
awful. Oh, the Chiefs defense. Yeah. Oh, sure. Yeah. I think it's, you know, we asked Mike Florio this, how good is the Rams defense really? I think it's an interesting question to ask. They're 18th in the league in yards per game. They are 19th in the league in points allowed per game. Now, granted, they have that game against the Chiefs where they scored, what was it, 54-51? Is that how that one ended? 105 points, I know that. I think that was the distribution then. So you have that on your record. I mean, you went up against the Chiefs offense at the height of its powers probably. So I get that. Still, I think it's a fair question. How good is the Rams defense really? And how sharp can you look against it with Mitch returning from injury?
The bottom of the hour is brought to you by Northwestern Basketball. Join Coach Collins and Northwestern Basketball at the new Welsh Ryan Arena this winter. Season and single game tickets on sale now at NUSports.com. We're Bernstein and McKnight. We are on 9-1. We like to take your phone calls. We read your texts, 312-644-6767. You can text us at 67011. And as the Bears get ready to play the Rams, we are discussing that. Hub Arkish is going to be joining us at the top of the hour. We'll get his thoughts on that. I was hoping for a little more fireworks between Hub and Danny Parkins yesterday and the disagreement
didn't get it.
Over Mike McCarthy. Yeah. No, they're just coming at this from completely different directions. It's a chicken and the egg kind of thing. Hub believes that Mike McCarthy is a great head coach, one of the best coaches of his era, and it is he who made Aaron Rodgers what he is, where Danny Parkins believes that Mike McCarthy is an awful head coach who was lucky to have Aaron Rodgers propping him up, and that Aaron Rodgers, in large part, has even been held back by Mike McCarthy as head coach. And it didn't really quite engage in the way that I expected.
Is it possible that one begat the other? That Mike McCarthy and the fact that, listen, he did work with Aaron Rodgers to change the release point and work his mechanics and become the quarterback he is. That is fact. And if Aaron Rodgers would like to go back and do a little revisionist history on how he arrived as a self-made man and pulled himself up from his bootstraps and stuff, that's cool. But the fact is, he was a JUCO kid that got a Jeff Tedford schooling that needed some changing once he got to the NFL. He sat the bench for a little while. If that caused some resentment, that's probably a source of tension between himself and McCarthy. The fact that McCarthy is a bad head coach, though, that can orbit around that narrative. That can be true while that part of the relationship is strained.
When we talk about Aaron Rodgers and relationships, we know he's also a weirdo. We know the stuff that goes on with his own family, what he's been accused of. A lot of that stuff has been... You know,
that means you have to take Jordan Rodgers at his word. That's a guy who went on national television in search for love. Like, I'm sorry, there's something chemically imbalanced if you're on a national television show searching for love and fame.
We have two Omaha Steaks family gift packs to give away. We are going to give away one at some point in the next segment. Ooh. We'll talk some basketball with Mark Schanowski of NBC Sportsnet Chicago. The Jim Boylan era has begun. And as always, Mark will have thoughts and information. He is next on Bernstein and McKnight on The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Hey, Schanowski, I heard what you said.
Mark Schanowski.
I've seen a handful of different times where there was video of him lighting up Jamokes in pickup games.
NBC Sports Chicago Bulls pre- and post-game host.
Mr. Carter to you.
The most interesting man in the world.
I'm coming for you, man. You heard it here first.
Mark Schanowski with Bernstein and McKnight on The Score.
He's on Twitter at Mark Schanowski. You can see him before, during, and after Bulls games on NBC Sportsnet Chicago. And we had a fun one last night. We were introduced to a new coaching personality in action. It is a small sample size, but we now have seen the Bulls as coached by Jim Boylan. Mark, hello. How are you?
I tell you what, there's a new sheriff in town. He's made it very clear he's in charge and things are going to be done his way. I guess that's refreshing to some people who thought Fred Hoiberg was too passive, but it does raise a number of interesting questions that I'm sure we're going to discuss over the next few minutes.
Yeah, the first of is their conditioning, where if they're too tired to take the ball to the basket late in the game because they're playing normal hard defense and it just took everybody's wind. What the hell were they doing in practice this whole time?
Well, you have to wonder too. I was saying during the news conference, you know, obviously we're watching it with Kendall and Will Perdue. We had Horace Grant on as well last night, and I said after he made that comment, that's an indictment on himself to say that the team's in poor condition. He was the associate head coach for the last 3 1/4 seasons. What in the world is he doing if he's not telling Fred we're not in shape? We need to run more. I thought that was a very curious way to go about it. I mean, obviously he's trying to say, I'm going to set a new tone for this program, but it also reflected on what has been done in the past, and he's a part of everything that has been done over the last 3 1/4 seasons. So I thought that was odd that he mentioned that. The fact that he paused after the question about the 5 free throws and said, you know, honestly, we're not tough enough. Again, you're part of that coaching staff. That falls on you as well.
Yeah, what of the it was a late possession where Zach LaVine pulls up to hit a shot or try and hit a 3-pointer with about 20 seconds left in the shot clock, and you see afterward Boylan reacts and is kind of yelling at LaVine, like, what are you doing? He used some choice words because the camera caught his mouth. I'm wondering if you think there will be consequences for that, if you think that he will deal with Zach in a way differently than Fred has, because we've seen this from Zach, I think, at least twice before this year.
Well, to Zach's credit, he was very mature about it in the locker room afterwards. He looked the reporters in the eye when asked about it, and he said that I need to be a more efficient player. And Boylan did indicate before the game that he had individual meetings with all the players on the roster, told them what the expectations were for them. And his message to Zach was, you can't be a volume scorer anymore. You have to be a guy that takes good shots, that plays within the flow of the offense. And I'm sure, you know, they probably address late game situations where, you know, you can't take all the responsibility for trying to win games on your shoulders. You have to play within the system. The first reaction to it from Zach was, okay, I'm going to take that to heart. I'm going to try to be more efficient. And that's exactly what he said to reporters in the locker room after the game. But as you mentioned, it's a small sample size. It's one game. If that kind of one-on-one criticism continues, he may rebel. But for now, I think everybody's falling in line. But they've got to win some games. If you don't win, all of a sudden, all this talk about changing things is going to create some dissension in the locker room.
It also makes some of the clapping and jumping and fist pumping ring hollow. Winning has to accompany that too, does it not?
Yeah, I think so too. I think that a lot of the stuff we saw was reminiscent of what you'd see from a college coach. You know, the screaming and the getting in a defensive stance and doing all things to try to exhort your players and trying to put your arm around guys going to timeouts. It just seemed like he was trying so incredibly hard to show the front office and his players the passion that he's going to bring to the court every night. And you know, it's his debut game as an NBA head coach. We'll see how things, will moderate as time goes on. But he was certainly over the top last night. You know, you heard him yelling from the sideline throughout the game. It was kind of reminiscent of the Thibodeau era where he's barking out instructions throughout the game. He wants to make a good impression. He wants to show the front office and the fan base that he's the right guy for the job, and only time will tell if he is.
Mark Schanowski, the Bulls pre- and post-game guy on NBC Sports Chicago. You follow him on Twitter, at Mark Schanowski. Wondering, Mark, if you think, I know that the front office told us that Jim Boylan is the guy to preside over this part of the rebuild and bring the core together, but do you see him facing any specific different challenges than Fred would have faced in getting these guys back from injury and together as a core?
Well, I think they made this change with that in mind, that they'd be almost whole with the exception of not having Denzel Valentine for the rest of the season. And it will be a 50-plus game sample size for Boylan to show what he can do. You know, all the harangue about him being the permanent head coach rather than interim is ridiculous, because every coach in professional sports is interim. You know, you're only going to be there for a certain amount of time, and if the 58 games that he coaches do not go well, they'll certainly make a change after the year. You know, they'll have to pay him for next season. That doesn't mean he has to be the head coach. I think that Boylan has a lot to prove. I think the front office believes that this roster, when whole, is good enough to be at least competitive in a weaker Eastern Conference. I'm not saying they expect him to go 500 over the last 58 games. I just think they feel like they should be competitive most nights, and they should see some progress in the win-loss record. But most importantly, they need to see some progress in the developing chemistry, which we haven't seen yet, between Zach LaVine, Chris Dunn, Lauri Markkanen, and now you can throw Wendell Carter Jr. in the mix. Those are the four guys that are going to be the foundation of what they're trying to build going forward. They got to get them on the court playing together, and they have to show over a longer sample size that they can be an effective unit working together.
One thing we know is he was empowered to remodel his coaching staff. He's bringing up Dean Cooper and Nate Lenzer from the Windy City Bulls. And I found it meriting a raised eyebrow at the very least that Randy Brown resigned instead of accepting a demotion from the bench to behind the bench, or at least the appearance of a demotion, especially because we know the strength of the relationship between Brown and Jerry Reinsdorf, how he came back to the team many years ago, and it was out of the largesse of Jerry to do what he did, and he worked his way up. I was a little surprised that quickly he's just not a Bull anymore.
Yeah, I wouldn't be shocked if Randy Brown doesn't find his way back into the organization in some kind of front office or scouting capacity. His previous role before going down to the bench was the assistant to Gar Forman, and there was always the whispers that there was some kind of mole in the coaching staff that was reporting to Gar about what was going on behind closed doors in the locker room. And I don't know if that was something that Boylan wanted to make sure that was addressed immediately and that storyline was going to be gone for good, or if it was exactly what he said, that he wanted to promote some of his younger assistants and thought that Brown would be put in a different role. Given Randy's circumstances, I find it hard to believe that he would just walk away from a very large assistant coach's salary and just say, okay, I'm not going to sit behind the bench, I'm done. There's probably more that goes into it, and I'm sure we'll find out more about it in the coming days.
Watching Markkanen, the first quarter things didn't quite drop for him. He got things going a little bit later, it seemed, but I kind of forgot that defensively, he's not exactly a lockdown dude. How much better can he get as a 7-footer in this league?
Well,
I mean, defensively specifically.
Spot at 7 feet. Obviously, he's going to be playing against smaller, quicker guys, and now it seems like just about every four in the NBA is going out to the 3-point line. So you have to be able to move your feet, and you have to be able to switch on pick and rolls, all the same kind of responsibilities that we talked about with Wendell Carter Jr. I think that he's got some potential on that end of the floor, but right now he seems to be kind of finding his way. I was amazed that he got up 24 shots yesterday. I mean, he's certainly not been bashful since he's come back, and those shots have almost come at a direct expense of what Zach LaVine was doing. So it'll be interesting to watch how that dynamic develops over the course of time. And when you get Bobby Portis back, he likes to shoot it as well. The new coach wants to play at a slower tempo. He made that clear. He invoked the name of the great Greg Popovich last night, saying he wants that road dog mentality. And he said, you know, we're not going to necessarily be the pace and space team that we were previously. We're going to try to grind out wins, especially when we're away from home. And I think that's going to mean less touches and less shot opportunities for everybody. And it's up to Boylan to convince all his players that that's the best way for this group to win.
I was going to ask about his offensive philosophy, about what we know. Is he going to do it himself, or is he going to delegate authority as far as coaching the offense?
I think right now he wants to put all of it on his shoulders. Sean Respert was promoted to a bench coach. He'd been a developmental guy with a couple of different teams around the league. I know he's thought of highly within the organization. He was a very good offensive player at Michigan State, didn't really have a great pro career, but he may get more responsibilities in terms of game preparation and offensive execution. But I think you saw last night that they want to use Wendell Carter Jr. more as a facilitator in the mid post and the high post. He was getting a lot of touches where that he would make some decisions with the ball in his hands as to what was going to happen next. They're going to use him more in screen and roll at different points of the court and let him be a decision maker, and I think that's one of the things they identified immediately when they scouted him, that he has some of that Al Horford in his game where he can be a high post center, he can make some shots, he can also make decisions on what should be, which way the offense should go. So I think he's going to play a larger role. I think you're going to see a lot of interchanges between Carter and Markkanen in terms of high-low sets, and I think that you'll see less of them shooting 3-point shots.
Is Boylan willing then to let his guys get out and run a little in transition? I don't know if it was just last night and a little discombobulation, but every time they seem to have a transition chance, I kept yelling, what's the hurry? Like, they seem to just really get frantic about things and not understand when they had numbers. And I know it's been a little bit of a problem this year so far with everybody playing, but it seemed very discombobulated last night.
Well, Boylan said afterwards that they're going to make opposing defenses work through the shot clock. They're not necessarily going to try to get out and run on every possession. You know, Fred wanted to push the pace at every opportunity. He wanted to get the ball off the board, and even after a made basket, push the ball up and try to get something going early in the shot clock. Boylan indicated he wants to make the other team work for 24 seconds, and I don't know if that's necessarily the best approach in today's NBA, where most scores are in the 110 range, and you've got to be able to score points to win. Obviously, yesterday was 96-90, and he said, well, all we needed was 98 points, but you didn't get them. You got 90. They're going to have to find some kind of balance between execution in the half court and also taking advantage of your fast break opportunities, because you do have some guys, especially when Chris Dunn comes back, you know, you have Dunn and Levine who can really push the pace, and I think that you've got to look for easy baskets. You don't want to let the defense set up and try to run a play every time down. It's just too difficult at the pro level.
No, we shall see. Mark, I know you've got a lot to watch in some of these coming games as we figure out what the Bulls have and this new coach. We appreciate you joining us.
All right, guys. It's certainly been interesting, and I think when Dunn and Portis get back, you'll start seeing them win more games, and I think obviously that's something Bulls fans have been waiting for.
Thanks,
Mark Schanowski joins us this day, this time, on this day each week, 11:40 on Wednesdays.
Awesome. Talking
always is. Right now, caller number 7. Caller 7 to the contest line, 312-591-6700, wins an Omaha Steaks family gift pack.
Meat.
If you don't win, you can still buy this great package by going to omahasteaks.com and entering the code WSCR, and we'll give another one away between now and 1 o'clock on the Bernstein and McKnight Show. You know what's next?
Hub!
Football thoughts with him on the Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.